This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insight and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We are committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 27th of January, 2017. I'm Jamie Veitch. I'm your host for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. And we are broadcasting live from the Sheffield Live studio above the showroom in the workstation in the centre of Sheffield. If you're listening on FM radio, well, you could also be listening through our internet live stream and vice versa. This programme, of course, will also be available as a podcast later from the Sheffield Live website. Talking about podcasts, did you miss last week's programme? Panic not. We had fantastic guests last week. We had Johnny Douglas. He's a difference engineer. What is a difference engineer? Well, listen to the podcast to find out more. He was talking about automation, fairness, and the future of work. Fascinating stuff. Alongside Martin Bennett, a business and personal coach, talking about avoiding and overcoming procrastination, setting and achieving your goals. Also fascinating stuff. So, of course, you can catch the podcast of last Friday's show on the Sheffield Live website, sheffieldlive.org. Go to radio shows, find Business Live, and it is there. Now, I said fabulous guests last week. We have fabulous guests lined up in the studio today for today's programme. I'm really excited to have on today's programme, we have Jay Bayani of Bayani HR and Employment Law. She's going to be doing a regular slot on the programme with us every month, talking about things that you need to know, whether you're running a business or a social enterprise, in terms of keeping up to date with what's going on in employment legislation and law. We also have Elizabeth Chasser, also known as Startup Liz. That's her Twitter handle. And she has been blogging on the site Medium, posting some posts which have gone have become very, very popular about her own journey through the startup scene and the startup community. Is the startup community, and is tech in particular, sexist? Are there obstructions in the way of women that aren't there for men? Well, Liz has observed firsthand what's going on, so we'd like to talk to her, and you'll hear from her soon. Also on the show today, Joe Hertzberg. Joe runs the Real Junk Food Project in Sheffield. Now, if you haven't come across it, this is a fantastic initiative, and they're using food that could otherwise go to waste and creating wonderful meals out of it in a cafe and even gourmet fine dining nights. So we're going to hear more about Real Junk Food Project and about Startup Liz, Elizabeth Chasser later. But first, I want to welcome Jay Bayani back to the Sheffield Live radio studio. Jay, hello.
Hello, morning, Jamie.
Good morning. Thanks very much for coming in today. And it's great to welcome you back. And I'm really excited that we'll be able to keep people updated regularly now, as you've agreed to come into the programme regularly to talk about what they need to know and what they need to be aware of.
Yeah, well, it's a fast-moving world in the world of HR and employment law. So, you know, it is really useful for employers and employees, I think, to be aware of what's changing.
It is indeed. And you say fast-moving, absolutely right. There's been quite a lot in the news that's been reported on this week. And people have talked about a report from the Parliamentary Committee for Women Inequalities, who've made a recommendation about a new framework needed to prevent women from being forced into adopting more stringent standards of dress than male colleagues in the workplace. That report came out, and alongside that, there were coverage of some would say ridiculous dress standards that were being applied to women in the workplace, but not to men. Heels between a certain number of inches. requirement to wear makeup, and much, much more. Now, what's your take?
Well, working in the profession I work in, it's pretty commonplace, actually, that there are requirements of women to dress in a certain way, to wear makeup, to look smart. And there's a difference between being made to look smart and an employer having a dress code, which is perfectly acceptable. We work with all our clients on when we build their policies and their sort of operating procedures, we always ask whether there's a dress code. And there are certain things that you can legitimately build into that. But where you're requiring somebody to dress or look in a certain way that's gender specific, then that is discriminatory. And of course, men might say, well, quite often we're asked to wear a shirt and tie, where women aren't at events quite often is the case. That as well would be gender specific and therefore discriminatory.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. I remember about 25 years ago when I started as a trainee solicitor, in those days, as a woman, you weren't allowed to go to court wearing trousers. And that actually changed during my career as a young lawyer. And I remember, you know, the excitement of being able to actually wear trousers. And now you look back and you think, well, how was that possible? That...
Yes. Well, quite. I can remember in the early 90s working in a PLC in London. And the dress code was you must always look professional. The interpretation of the dress code by the managers there was that the women working in that company weren't allowed to wear trouser suits.
Yeah.
And yes, we look back and this is astonishing, really.
And so it's surprising that, you know, there's still so much of it around. And I don't personally think that there needs to be a change in the law, because the law already protects men and women who are made to dress or look in a particular way dependent on their gender. It's more about challenging it. You know, a lot of people won't want to challenge an employer for fear of losing their job. Tribunal fees were introduced a couple of years ago, which have made it impossible for a lot of people to access justice and challenge their employer in an employment tribunal.
Yes, quite. I mean, those tribunal fees have had a dramatic impact, haven't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've seen very, very clear cases of discrimination, gender and race discrimination, where people haven't been able to pursue the case because of the fees.
Because of the tribunal fee.
Although now the government is saying that there is an imminent review of the fees that's actually seriously going to be looked at, whereas in the past, although there have been a lot of calls for a review of the fees, I don't think that's been taken very seriously.
No.
But I'm hopeful that they will be reviewing them.
OK, well, that will be interesting, and we'll have to keep and continue to follow that. So with regards to dress code discrimination, as you mentioned, if a dress code calls for people to be smartly dressed or appropriately dressed, that's one thing. But if a dress code is gender specific, then that is clearly discriminatory. You mentioned perhaps not necessarily a need to change the law, but a need to challenge. And there's the issue here then of interpretation, isn't there, where a manager or a business says, well, our dress code is about professionalism, and for that you are expected to do X, Y and Z and go beyond what would even legal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's about creating a workplace culture where there's a respect for people regardless of their gender, but also an understanding, a clear understanding of what is expected of people in terms of what is smart, because in one workplace that'll be very different to another. It's a bit similar to the cases we've seen recently on whether it's acceptable to have tattoos in the workplace.
Indeed.
Now that's not gender specific, so it's perfectly okay for an employer to insist that an employee doesn't or not to take on an employee because they've got tattoos. But where it comes to gender-specific things, then that can be challenged and be discriminatory. So it's just being clear on what the rules are and why they're there, and making sure that they're not related to gender.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, that's a really interesting point. And we're going to move on to other things going on within the areas of employment law. But just to quickly recap, if anyone is interested in the parliamentary report published this week, then you can find it at publications.parliament.uk. If you then look in the publications and records report, it's a report called High Heels and Workplace Dress Codes. And that was published this week. And that coincided with the publication of research that has just come out from the Chartered Management Institute. They found that of the people they surveyed, 81% of managers had witnessed gender discrimination in the workplace in 2016. So reports are of discrimination being rife. So, Jay, what else is going on? What else do people need to be aware of this week? Some interesting cases.
Yeah, I think one of the most interesting issues for me is around redundancy.
Yes.
And whether it's acceptable or lawful to make somebody redundant when they're pregnant or on maternity leave. And at the moment, there's a consultation looking at a possible ban on redundancies for women that are pregnant and for a period of 6 months after they return to work. Yes. So this is at an early stage at the moment. But it's interesting because I work with lots and lots of SMEs, and they already struggle with the protection that there is for women on maternity leave. Sometimes employers miss the fact that there's already a greater protection. So if you're on maternity leave and your employer looks to make redundancies, then you're protected in that you get first refusal for any available jobs. So that protection's yes. already there.
And sometimes employers miss that.
Yes. Yeah. And they have to factor that in because it is already in legislation. It's an added protection. But I personally, I think to offer greater protection means that it would really hamper a business's ability to do what they need to do for their business. And during a period of time where somebody's pregnant or on maternity leave, sometimes a business changes and there's a need to make redundancies. So I think it would be very difficult for a lot of smaller businesses to accommodate any change in the law.
Yes, and of course that does need to be borne in mind as well whilst these proposals are out for consultation.
Yeah.
And I think Germany apparently has granted further protections for women who are pregnant or have returned from maternity leave, and there has been reports that pregnancy related discrimination has doubled over the last decade, but that's in the context of the existing legislation anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, my fear would be that if there's more legislation, it could be counterproductive because you could have employers thinking, well, you know, it's too much of a hot potato to take somebody on, going back to the days where employers were wary of taking somebody of a childbearing age, as it were. Mm. That might happen again, I think, certainly in certain sectors.
Which would be a very detrimental impact.
Absolutely, yeah. So personally, I don't think it's a good move. I think there's sufficient protection in place already. And again, similar to the dress code issue, it's about empowering women to be able to challenge that if they're discriminated against on the grounds of their pregnancy, which is already unlawful and claimable under the Equality Act.
Yes, so empowering women to challenge that and to claim about that. Now, if people are working in a culture that is a throwback to a previous age, and they're perhaps the only woman in the business, and their employer is not acting lawfully, it can be very, very difficult to challenge, can't it?
I mean, there are certain steps that you would take. So you might raise something informally at first, and then you'd go through a formal step of a grievance. And all employers should have a grievance procedure in place.
Of course,
And then, of course, you know, the business taking seriously a grievance that's raised. And then the next step, if that's not resolved, is to is the right to go to a tribunal. But as we've discussed, you know, people are very worried about jobs these days. In some sectors, they're also worried about being seen to be a troublemaker. So, you know, they'll put up, a lot of women put up with a lot of bad behaviour from their employers because they don't want to affect their future employability.
Yes, indeed.
So, the correct sort of process in law is that they can bring a tribunal claim for unfair dismissal, if appropriate, or for sex discrimination.
Yes.
Or pregnancy-related discrimination. And we see lots of cases involving pregnancy-related discrimination, so I can understand why this consultation's taking place, but I just think the practicalities of putting it into place could be counterproductive for business.
And that's a really important point to flag up as well. Indeed. Yeah. Great. OK, thank you very much for that, Jay. OK, so finally, and we've only got 2 or 3 minutes, but we're going to get you back into the studio in February. Other interesting things have been going on in employment law, employment legislation, and a couple of cases recently concerning modern slavery. Mm. Tell me more about those.
So the Modern Slavery Act is a tool by which employers have to report incidents of modern slavery, and for larger employers they have to prepare a statement setting out their how they deal with potential slavery issues.
And so now, to interrupt there, but just for anyone listening, larger employers as defined in terms of numbers, turnover, perhaps people can tweet you to find out more and so on after the show.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But for sort of practical purposes, for most SMEs, although they're not required to publish a modern slavery statement, that may well be the trajectory. So I think we quite often with legislation, we start with large employers in terms of a big turnover or a large number of employees, and then that filters down to SMEs.
Because we've got this issue with larger employees above 250 people who will have to be reporting on gender.
Yes, exactly.
So sorry to derail us there, and that's something we'll have to come back to. And we've talked about before, like when you were on the show last year, in terms of the publishing of gender pay figures. Yeah. But right, let's go back to slavery.
So in its sort of most practical sense, modern slavery is about enslaving people to work within a workplace and treating them appallingly. So what was interesting recently was a case in the Nottingham Crown Court of two brothers who were encouraging and facilitating people to come over to the UK, put them in workplaces, but take the majority of their salary, and they were living in appalling conditions. And so that was a real example of how the Modern Slavery Act can be used by law enforcers. And these two brothers have received sentences of 6 years each.
Yes.
So although that's a criminal case rather than an employment case, it is actually really relevant because it was about enforced labour.
Yes,
and and that's exactly why, you know, there's a real issue at the moment quite often with migrant workers who are made to work in terrible, conditions while somebody else is profiteering
from it. So the Act there has proven to be of worth and of value in terms of taking, bringing justice for the people who are enforcing that labour and enslaving those people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's been fascinating to talk today, Jay. And of course, you've also raised issues that employers, whether you're a business, whether you're a social enterprise, should be aware of. First of all, the fact that that quite a few small employers aren't fully aware of their duties with regards pregnancy and maternity, and don't always get it right, even if they mean to get it right. As you mentioned earlier, they don't necessarily get everything right, such as offering people first choice on any new roles and other issues too. Yeah. Secondly, you mentioned grievance procedures when we're talking about treatment of people and how every business should have a grievance procedure, of course, and a policy in place. Lots of people don't. That's something where, of course, your organisation, your business will help people as well. Mm. So fascinating stuff. There's going to be lots more employment law, employment legislation coming up over the coming weeks and months. You'll be back on the show in February. But in the meantime, people can pick your brains over Twitter. They can email you. They can look at the resources on your website. So do you want to give out the website and Twitter addresses, Jay?
Yeah, sure. It's www.byarneylaw.co.uk. And my Twitter handle is @byarneyhrlaw.
Super. Well, it's been great to speak with you. And thank you very much for coming into the studio today, Jay.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Super. You're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. So do you remember train spotting? I remember train spotting the first time round. So we're going to take a quick break for a track of music. This is Elastica. The track is 2-1. It was on the soundtrack to the original train spotting back in the early 90s.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. Business Live is our weekly programme about business and social enterprise. So whether you're running a business or a social enterprise, whether you're an employee or an employer, whether you're freelance, whether you're thinking about setting something up, this is a programme for you. And we're really keen to hear from you. If you want to suggest a topic that you'd like us to cover, if there's something going on in the news you think it's relevant to businesses and social enterprises, and you've got a comment, if you want to put yourself forward to be a guest on the show, or suggest someone else who you think we should interview, then get in touch. All you need to do is email jamie@sheffieldlive.org, text 07904 272 200, find Sheffield Live on Twitter, find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. We're really keen to hear from you. And many of our guests end up on the show because people have put them forward. So do get in touch. Now, in today's programme, we've been talking at the start of the show today about employment law, changes and things that you should be aware of if you're running a business or a social enterprise. Now, if you've only just tuned in and you've missed that, panic not, because the podcast of today's programme will be up on the Sheffield Live website from about 11 a.m. today. All you need to do is go to sheffieldlive.org, find radio shows. I'm really excited now to turn to our next two guests in the studio. We're going to turn to each of them in turn, but I'm going to introduce both of them for you. So in the studio right now, we're joined by Elizabeth Chasser and Joe Hertzberg. Good morning, Elizabeth. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
Thanks both for coming in today. It's great to welcome you to the studio. Elizabeth, you've been on this programme before.
Yes.
It was middle of last year after you were working in Gaza.
That's right.
And
yes.
Fascinating stuff, helping the startup and tech community there. And of course, Joe, you've been in Sheffield Live before on programmes. We have a wonderful sustainability programme on the radio on Thursday afternoons with Alistair at 4 o'clock. Well worth listening to. You did a great slot on there. You've been on the TV as well, haven't you?
I have, yes, with Simon, yes.
Yeah, Simon Thake. So he does a lovely, lovely TV show, Talking Sheffield, and that was a really good slot. So both, thank you very much for coming in today. Now, I'd just like to ask each of you to introduce what you do so that listeners who haven't come across what you do can be aware. So first of all, let's start with Joe in terms of the Real Junk Food Project. What does it do? What do you do?
So we're a food waste campaign, and I set the project, the Sheffield version of the project, up in May 2015.
Great.
So we save food from going to landfill.
You save quite a lot of food.
A lot of food from going to landfill, yes.
Yes. And you save it by then making wonderful meals, wonderful recipes from it, and you run the cafe. You run it in a pretty innovative way as well.
We do, yes, yeah. So everything we do is based on the pay as you feel concept, meaning people can donate money, their time, or skills in return for a meal or food from the project.
Brilliant, and that's been going from strength to strength, and we're going to hear a bit more about that in a few minutes as well. So listeners, you've got a treat in store, a treat for the imagination, because we're going to have your taste buds watering by the end of today.
Yes.
Now, Elizabeth, also known as Startup Liz, your Twitter handle, you are a tech innovator. You've launched your own app. Tell us more about that.
Yes, I'm a bit of an accidental startup, certainly a very accidental tech startup, and I devised a simple technology solution to making a much more inclusive voice in public consultation. So using simple SMS, allowing everyone, whether they have English as a second language, low literacy, low tech savviness, or simply want to remain anonymous in consultation and be more likely to speak their mind, so to speak, to have a very accessible way to do so.
So accessibility, and accessibility for people who aren't necessarily digital natives, as the term is, in terms of highly au fait with technology.
Absolutely, and that's just one benefit of it, if I can say so myself. It's not only that, but it's also people who have perhaps low incomes who can't afford smartphones or fancy data packages. SMS is a very accessible, affordable, simple way to still have your voice heard.
Yes, it certainly is. And with mobile phone packages these days, data can be limited to a number of gigabytes. And as you say, not necessarily everyone has a smartphone, but texts are often included free or very cheaply in packages. So interesting concept there. I love the way that you describe yourself as a sort of accidental entrepreneur, and yet the sort of absolute vision for what you wanted to launch and how it would help people, and the need for this in the marketplace as well is clear. And that sort of bringing something to market which solves an issue, solves a problem as well, would resonate with social entrepreneurs as well as ordinary entrepreneurs listening to the show. You've been quite outspoken on your blogs recently, and I've really enjoyed reading them because I think this is an issue that needs to be discussed and needs to be communicated. For people who haven't come across your writing on Medium, what are you writing about?
Well, thank you for that. Yes, as I said, this journey started quite accidentally, and I realized kind of quickly on that I was learning some tough lessons, some lessons that were certainly valuable to me. And as I began to share them with other people, I realized that they did have value for others. And someone encouraged me to begin to write those down so that they could be shared, and that hopefully people wouldn't have to go through the same tough kind of learning the way I did. But it was accidental in that I decided after a 20-year career in the public sector that I wanted to be my own boss and become, yes, an entrepreneur. And I had absolutely no idea what that meant. So I just took a leap of faith and got into the local community in Sheffield. As a matter of fact, the first month I moved back up here, the Entrepreneurs Festival was going on, and I thought, well, if that's not a sign, I don't know what is. So I attended that and began to meet people who were extremely supportive in the community and were telling me about the different things to get involved in and how you might begin to be an entrepreneur. And one of the first things people told me about was a startup weekend. And I had absolutely no interest in going, but someone said, no, you must, if you want to learn to start a business. And so first of all, I had to look up what a startup was.
Yes.
So I Googled it, of course, and learned about all kinds of things startup-y and thought it was even less of an appropriate thing for me to do, because it seemed to be very tech oriented and I'm not a techie at all. But I went because it was the start of a new journey, and it just seemed like, well, if I don't do this, then this new journey is just never going to get off the ground.
No.
And so I turned up to that startup weekend, and it just began this whole 2-year journey that's happened since, and it led to another startup weekend, which led to Textocracy, which is the company that I have, and it does have a social impact at its mission. I took part in a social impact accelerator, but it's not been an easy journey, and every lesson I think has had some value, and I began to write about those,
yes,
and put them out on Medium, and I've gotten quite a surprising response to them.
Well, you have, haven't you? I mean, your posts such as How I Became a Solo Female Founder Non-Techie Over 40 and Your Key Secrets to Newbie Success has been incredibly popular. Your post about how so many business books that are recommended to people are written by men has been really popular. Your post about cybercrime and how cybercrime nearly broke your heart. Again, really, really popular. Now, those are all great issues. And you've talked about, I suppose, in your three key lessons, your three key secrets to newbie success will help other people thinking about taking that plunge, because that will resonate as well with some people who are in a job, not necessarily a job they enjoy, but it's a secure income, who are thinking about starting their dream. Now, you've described your three key secrets. Just summarize them for me.
Right. It's kind of become my mantra now. They are just start, just ask, and just turn up.
What does that mean?
Exactly what it says on the tin. So I came out of the Sheffield train station one day, and I saw this big sign for the Entrepreneurs Festival, and I thought, just start. I've got to go. And I did. I just turned up at that, and I began to ask. I asked everybody I met there, and I think, as I say in my blog, I was still feeling the panic of having left a secure paycheck, so I only attended the free fringe events.
Yes.
And began to ask the people I met, what are you doing? How did you get here? Are you an entrepreneur? What does that mean? How can I be one? And of course, in true Sheffield form, everyone was amazingly forthcoming and very supportive.
Yeah, wonderful.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was not shy about asking, and most people were not shy about telling me either. So it worked out really well. And so just from that very first event, I was so pleased I had just started, because feeling a bit panicky about having left a career, it would have been so easy just to hole up at home and think, oh my goodness, what have I done? And kind of rock in a corner, which was a real tendency at first.
Yeah.
So I did just start. And I found that 99% of people want to share what they know, and they want to help you. If you have a question, people want to try and answer it for you if they can, or send you to someone who might be able to help you. So definitely just ask. I've been in lots of forums myself where I wasn't brave enough to open my mouth, or I had a million questions and I thought they would sound silly, or people would think I was being a pest, or any of those things. And I just learned really quickly, you've got to ask, or you won't get anywhere. And I mentioned the Startup Weekends a minute ago. One of the people that I met during this just asking said, you must go to a Startup Weekend. You just have to go. Just do that. And as I said, it was a real challenge for me mentally as well as knowledge-wise. And so I did. I just turned up on that Friday night of the first Startup Weekend that I had ever heard of. And it began the whole rest of my story. I would not be here today if I hadn't just turned up.
Yeah. Wonderful. Absolutely. Now, the rest of your story has been greatly successful, but like any entrepreneur, you face barriers and challenges. But you've also talked about specific barriers and challenges that perhaps are entrenched, it's fair to say, within the tech community, and the tech community the other side of the Atlantic as well, and has been oft criticized for its attitude towards women founders and women entrepreneurs. And it's an issue that I think needs, well, everyone will agree, I hope, thinks needs to be discussed. What specific obstructions, challenges and barriers have people thrown your way, or have you faced, because you are a woman in tech?
I think the main one is the most difficult. And then often I think because the endemic culture, that people don't realize what they're doing. They don't realize the effect of their actions or their decisions or their attitudes or the choice of words that they use. And it's really hard to fight that, because it's a bit of an invisible obstruction. And I try to gently point it out or to question something that's happened. And it's not easy. It's often not met favorably. Very few people will say, oh, I see what you mean. I see how that could hinder your participation here or could have put you off. But many people don't see it that way. But also, when just the environment. So when I did my second Startup Weekend, and I was put in a team with 7 20-something young techie men wearing hoodies, and it didn't go well at first. I'm proud to say I did go on to win that Startup Weekend with Textocracy, so I feel a bit vindicated. But if I hadn't had, I think, the time on the clock, if I wasn't a bit older and had quite a career built on leadership and management, I can imagine if I'd had any inkling of self-doubt at that stage, I would have crumpled. I would have turned around and walked out because there was a point of contention in that group. And I stood up for myself, and I stood by my convictions, and I took my idea through the startup weekend. And as I said, I won it. But most women do not have that luxury of having had a career or any kind of a life situation which would put them on such a confident ground. And I consider myself quite assertive without being too horrible. And I put those skills to use, but it wasn't easy. So those are the kind of invisible or cultural issues. But I've had some downright overt, I hate to use the word discrimination. It's more of a people have made overt choices to treat me badly or treat me differently because I was female or because I was of a certain age. And because I wasn't a techie with a hoodie.
So specifically, they've made overt choices as well as the institutionalized and discrimination that perhaps people are blind to because of the way things have been working. There have actually been some specific overt instances as well. Can you tell us more about those?
Yes. At the end of that second startup weekend, which I won fair and square from a panel of judges.
Absolutely. Textocracy run.
Yes. Won. And part of that win was a 3-day design sprint immediately following the win. Yeah. So I was completely surprised by the win. So I hadn't paid that much attention to the prizes, to be quite honest. And so I suddenly found myself after the Sunday night win with this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday opportunity to work with some developers and get this thing off the ground. That was the prize. Yeah. I was also in the fortunate position. I was able to clear my diary and plan to stick around because it was in another town. The organizers, who were men, were saying, "Don't worry about it. We understand what you're trying to do. We see, you know, you've done your pitch. We'll build it for you. You know, kind of, you know, go away, leave us alone, and we'll just build it for you."
Okay.
And I was like, "No," because I thought not only did I want to be there to see my vision come to fruition. There was a lot to learn. If I was going to be able to lead a design team through building even a minimum viable product,
yes,
the learning of that 3 days would have been phenomenal anyway. So I turned up duly on the Monday morning, and the men had gotten together about half an hour earlier before I was due to arrive. And they had decided that one of the other teams should share in my prize and should have their product built by this team. And they told me this. And I said, "That's not fair for these reasons." No. And they were said, "Well, you can either share the prize through these 3 days, or you can have nothing."
Oh, right. That's not much of a choice, is it?
No. So I clearly stated how I thought this was wrong, why it wasn't fair. I kind of wanted to kind of play back to them what I heard them say, because I thought I gave them the benefit of maybe they're just not quite understanding what extortion or whatever this was. That didn't make any difference at all. So it turned out I actually had a fraction of the team, because the other team that they wanted to take through this was a member of their boys' club. A student who was finishing their master's dissertation, which was this product. So he got his dissertation product built for free from this design resource that was supposed to be mine. And he went on, and it looked fantastic, and he got a great grade on his dissertation, and he got to demo it at this conference, you know, and it worked out great for him. These organizers wanted to be sure that he had that opportunity. You know, And I think that's part of the perpetuation. So this was a young man who was a techie who was able to build this product, but that didn't fulfill the purpose of the startup weekend, so didn't win.
And yet, he was being shoehorned into this position, and it was going to erode what should have been the support given to your business as the winner of Startup Weekend.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think what really is telling for me is that, so that was a person of a certain demographic who was already doing quite well, who got a massive leg up from other people in his demographic to do even better. And so just the knock-on effects to his job prospects, his hiring prospects, his portfolio and everything else, that's going to last him, if not through the rest of his life, for a good significant proportion of his early career. And if I had been, let's say, a female in the same position in life, my product automatically did not get that same boost from that prize, which was all mine.
Indeed.
And then on the other hand, and on the other hand, one of the men that did work with me on that design team tried to overcome that handicap for me and was fantastic.
Okay, so there was a good experience from a person there, but a really poor experience was presented to you. But
that's right.
I was also interested in your heartbreak at cybercrime. And we're going to have to touch on this in about 20 seconds. Right. But some horrific quotes from... There was an article about 15 rising stars in cybersecurity. So kids who are young people who are doing mind-blowing things in cybersecurity. And then you've found this article, read it. The article flagged up their expertise. 7 of the 15 were young women. Well, were girls. They're all under 15. But a few quotes from them were horrifying, weren't they?
They were.
Yeah.
They were.
So a girl had been told, you're a woman, you can't go into cybersecurity. That's just for men. And another girl was told that guys are meant to be energetic and into adventure stuff, and that girls are supposed to be very girly. So you blogged about this, breaking your heart.
I did. I was doing my own research into cybersecurity to help me learn, and I came across that article. And as a 40-something woman, I could not square this issue of seeing women under 15, born since the turn of the new century, who were still experiencing these kind of statements or these sentiments. And I thought, as we've talked about things that have been invisible obstructions and overt ones, and I thought, what hope do they have? What chance do they have to get out of these mindsets that might limit them in their careers, in their dreams and aspirations? And I think we just heard on the news recently, there's been a study that says by the time you're 6, girls think that their talents are innately less than boys of the same age. It's a big battle ahead, and we've got a lot of work to do on those things.
There is an awful lot of work to do then, clearly. So that's been fascinating. I'd like to welcome you back to the studio to talk about this in more depth. In the meantime, of course, people can find out more about what you do, Elizabeth, and Textocracy by looking you up on Twitter. You're also on Medium. You're publishing articles elsewhere. Do you want to give out your Twitter address and any other links so people can find you?
Yes, on Twitter I'm at Startup Liz, and I will always post my blogs through Twitter. But on Medium I'm at Eshasir, which is my name. Yes, I love responses to my stories and I always reply.
Brilliant. Elizabeth will always reply, get in touch, engage with her. Elizabeth Chasser, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And this is Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM. I'm joined now in the studio by my next guest today. We have in the studio Joe Hertzberg from the Real Junk Food Project. Joe, hello again.
Hello again. Sorry.
So you talked earlier about what the Real Junk Food Project does, mm-hmm. and since then we've had a fascinating interview with Elizabeth about her own experiences. Mm-hmm. Let's just recap then. Real Junk Food Project. You take foods that would otherwise go to waste.
Yes.
You then create wonderful meals, mm-hmm. Wonderful recipes. You sell them in cafes, and mm-hmm. people can go along and pay as they feel. They can give time. They can give money.
Yes, yeah, that's it in a nutshell, really. And it's not just the cafes anymore. We
Indeed.
Do kind of have a bit of a four-pronged kind of, I can't think of the word now, but way of getting the food out to people. Because
yes.
for us, it's all about accessibility and also making sure that the food isn't kind of shoehorned into a certain section of society,
yes.
which is often a misconception about what we do, that we're just here to feed the needy or the poor, for example, where it's not about that. We're an environmental campaign and we want to say, you know, this food is perfectly edible and it's ridiculous that it's happening and we just want everybody to see that and eat it and enjoy it.
Yes.
With, you know, unlimited access.
And that's really interesting how you're adopting that four-pronged approach. So what if you like the other prongs?
Okay, so the other prongs, we have catering. So yes. We do buffets, I think we've got 5 wedding requests this year, which
wonderful.
Is, yeah, incredible. We did 1 last year, and then we've got 5 requests this year, so looking forward to those.
Yeah.
We have our cafes, so we've got, at the moment we've got just 1, which is the Steeple Corner Cafe up in Stafford Road, S2. So this opened 5 days a week from the start of January with our new chef.
Yes.
So that's going well. And then we hope to open another 2 to 3 this year as well in different locations.
That's brilliant. And this new venue since January, well, opening 5 days a week since January, and Steeple Corner Cafe.
Yes.
It was a new venue after where you have been running the cafe, of course.
Yes, yeah, which was Club Garden Road down in Sharrow. So we ran a cafe at the Regather Works building for our first year, which was an excellent stepping point, really, kind of getting our name out there and our kind of processes sorted out and an open door for volunteers. But we're kind of limited with space, and a lot of it back then was running a project around a cafe.
Yes.
So kind of we had storage issues, we had, you know, there was no way we could have expanded, really. So since September of last year, we've kind of gone on a really, really big expansion program.
Yes, this is about scale and scaling up a social enterprise.
Yeah, it really is. So for a long time, there was just me running the project kind of almost on a voluntary basis, really, for the first 12 to 18 months. And since September, we now have 3 full-time directors working on it. And we also have 2 employees as well. So, yeah, just being able to kind of expand like that and having
What an enormous achievement in terms of that sort of managed and careful but significant growth.
Yes, yeah. We've been... did take a leap of faith, definitely, but we've also been very careful in what we've been doing. I suppose we always planned for where we are now. It's just kind of taken a lot of time to get there.
Yes.
Because there's only so much one person can do, really.
Well,
but
most,
we've
most
always
definitely.
Had the ambition. Yeah.
But that's important, that sort of planning, particularly when it's about managing growth, and because many people get caught up by cash flow rather than income and expenditure. They look at the profit and loss figures, but the cash flow and when the actual money comes in can be the falling block, the stumbling block.
Yeah, and we've been fortunate in that we've had a bit of support from Key Fund for a cash flow loan. So we've taken that recently, drawn it down, and that's helped us kickstart what we're doing, really, because we knew our business plan's solid and we're confident in it. It's just that we knew we needed that initial kind of cash boost, but we didn't want to go down the traditional grant funding route because, well, we just didn't want to rely on it, and we didn't feel like we needed it. You know, we thought the pay-as-you-feel concept, we fully believe in it, and wanted
great
to show
stuff.
That it would work. So.
And show it does work.
Yeah.
That's brilliant as a social enterprise, earning your income. But like any other business, you sometimes need the access to sort of working capital that, that a loan can provide. So Key Fund have been supportive then?
Yes, they have. Yes, yeah. So we've got, it's got a small amount of a grant within the loan, and then that kind of pays for the interest of the loan over the 3 years, if it makes sense.
Great stuff. So we've covered a couple of your sort of prongs, your strands, if you like, in terms of segmentation and how you deliver food to people. We've covered cafes. We've talked about those. We've talked about catering as well. So cafe at the moment, but plan to Steeple Hill.
Steeple Corner Cafe. Yep.
Steeple Corner
it's
Cafe.
Definitely up the hill.
And catering as well, and weddings and so on coming up. Brilliant. What else? How else?
We've got our share house market, which you may have heard of. So we opened that as a trial initially on Christmas Eve of this year. So we did the 12 days of pay as you feel. So this got a fantastic amount of response from the media and from local Sheffielders as well. So we were really busy. We had had kind of over 100, 200 people on that first day. We continued it through to the 8th of January. And then we took a couple of weeks off because we thought, you know, it's gone really, really well, but there are a couple of issues. We just wanted to kind of resolve and just review what we'd done, because we're quite dynamic, you know, we've got we're fortunate to be in that position where we can just switch and change things and improve things as we go. So we've now opened 2 days a week. From Wednesday was the first day, 5 till 7, and then we'll open on Sunday from 2 till 4.
Great stuff. So 5 till 7 on Wednesday, mm-hmm. 2 till 4 on
a Sunday. Yes. Super. Yeah. So that's the Sharehouse Market, and it's on Carlisle Street, which is just down from Spittle Hill.
So just down from Spittle Hill, Carlisle Street.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful. What a great concept that is as well. Mm-hmm. Fourth strand then.
The fourth strand after that is our Fuel for School programme. So we are working with primary schools in Sheffield. We've got a few signed up. And what we're doing with the primary schools is delivering an educational package around food and food waste, where it comes from, and also delivering food to the schools.
Yeah.
And then it's cost neutral to the schools because they can decide what they would like to do with the food. So, for example, a couple of the schools have set up their own pay-as-you-feel market stalls for access for teachers, for pupils, for parents. The pupils get involved in running the stalls. And, you know, we've had Walkley Primaries being really into it, and also Green Hill Primary as well. So
lovely.
They've been leading the way in Sheffield for us.
Leading the way, and you're empowering them and helping them to then create their own, as you say, pay-as-you-feel markets and so on.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So that could go further. You could work with other schools as well.
Yeah, we really hope to. Yes, yes. I think there are another 100 we need to target in Sheffield.
And so what about partners? How does this all work? Where do you get your food from, and what other partners do you have?
Okay, so we work with, a variety of different businesses. So anywhere that produces food, basically, or sells food, will also produce waste at some point in their processes. So we tend to work with people from kind of big supermarkets down to small greengrocers and local businesses, and festivals, events, restaurants, for example. So anywhere that deals with food, really, we will kind of speak with them and go around and pick up their food waste.
Brilliant. So some great partners there.
Yes, yeah.
And then any other organisations you work with also to help spread the word and to...
Yes, yeah. So we've got a really good thing going with Sentinel Brewhouse at the moment, which are our monthly pop-up events. So,
and those have been popular, haven't
really
they?
Really popular. Yeah. Yeah, they sell out within hours. They're incredible. There are 30 places, and it's a beer and food pairing event. So we sell the tickets. It's £5 to reserve your place, yeah, and to pay for the drinks, and then the food's available pay as you feel on top of that. But Alex
Barlow, yes. Sentinel's director.
Yeah, so Alex and the team, they volunteer their time on a Monday because normally they're closed, so they open it up to work with us. And we've worked with Brez, the head chef, since February of last year, since he moved back up to Sheffield.
Brez, wonderfully named bar-wise.
I know.
great job he has that resonates with his surname.
Definitely, yeah. So he's been a brilliant kind of advocate of the project since he started volunteering with us, and always had this idea that he could definitely do something down at Sentinel, so they get to kind of put some of the waste that they produce into use as well, as well as the food that we bring along.
Yes, absolutely. So that's brilliant. And of course your next one of those is in February, and it sold out in an hour, didn't it?
Yeah, so February sold out really quickly, and the one after that will be in March, on March the 13th, as part of Sheffield Beer Week.
Superb. Well, loads going on there. We could talk for hours. Our guests today have all been fascinating. We've had Joe Hertzberg, who we've just been talking with about a real junk food project, and we've also had Elizabeth Chasser in the radio studio here as well, Startup Liz on Twitter, and of course earlier Jay Biani of Biani HR and Employment Law. So thanks ever so much for coming in, Joe. People can keep up to date with what's going on with the Real Junk Food Project. Find you on Twitter?
They can do, yes. We're at Real Junk Food SHF.
Super. That's great. Well, thank you for coming in. You'll have
thank
to come
you.
Back in again.
We will. Thank you.
Super. This has been Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. Business Live, our weekly business and social enterprise programme, so get in touch. Email jamie at sheffieldlive.org, text 07904 272 200, or find me, Jamie Veitch, or Sheffield Live on Twitter. Put yourself or someone else forward as a guest, or suggest what we should cover. Don't go away. because next up on Sheffield Live is our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk, so stay tuned for that from 10 all the way through to noon. And in the studio today with us as sound engineer has been Sangeeta. My thanks to her. My thanks to you also for listening, and my thanks to our fantastic, fascinating guests today. We'll play out with 1 minute of a track of music by the White Stripes, and this is a track called It's True That We Love One Another, so I think we should dedicate it to Theresa May and Donald Trump.